Proverbs chapter 5. I have an aggressive agenda. I think it's attainable. I think a lot more Bible, a lot less commentary is important. In recent months, we've done 3 to 5 chapters in a study, even on a Sunday morning, even on Lord's Day. And I think sometimes that we get bogged down and the big picture is lost by pastors doing slow-mo exposition, And I think, I look back in my younger days as a teacher and Bible expositor, and I realized, looking back, that, man, I could go on and on and on. And when you do go on and on and on one verse, there's a whole lot more you're words and a whole lot less of God's. So my objective is to really move at a better pace. Strangely, the older I get, the more I want to, wow, I just turned on here. Have I been talking to just myself for the last few minutes? What happened, Mike? What was that? Well, I guess I was going on and on. Proverbs chapter 5, I really believe it's important for us to keep 5, 6, 7, and 8 as much as possible as a package, because they belong together. Chapter 5, verse 1, my son, attend unto my wisdom and bow thine ear to my understanding, that thou mayest regard discretion, and that thy lips may keep knowledge. Those verbs, they continue to jump out at me. I want to point them out to you. The father, here's Solomon, writing to his son, calls him to do things. So attend to my wisdom, bow thine ear to mine understanding, and then regard discretion, and your lips should keep knowledge. He warns in verse 3, for the lips of a strange woman drop as a honeycomb, and her mouth is smoother than oil, but her end is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death. Her steps take hold on hell. Unless thou should ponder the path of life, her ways are movable, that thou canst not know them. Let me read you those same few verses from the English Standard Version. Verse 3 says, and I really prefer the modern translation, forbidden woman, rather than strange. I get the old English, but the way we use strange now, doesn't sound all that appealing, does it? Man, that was a strange woman. Very few of you ladies are tempted and lured away by any strange man. Dude's too strange, forget about it. So forbidden is actually a better translation. I like that. For the lips of a forbidden woman drip honey, and her speech is smoother than oil. But in the end, she's bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death. Her steps follow the path to Sheol. She does not ponder the path of life. Her ways wander, and she does not know it. She's movable. Her ways wander. Is that really who you want to be following? That strange guy, that forbidden man, is he the guy? You want to follow somebody that didn't even know where they're going? So we're warned about a forbidden woman, or in your lady's case, a forbidden man. I want to tell you again that I really believe that, yes, on one hand, there is a reality, a real forbidden man or a real forbidden woman that we are being warned about. But in a bigger sense, we'll see this as we go into chapter 8. It's really a personification of something bigger that is flattering and deceitful and destructive. It is the wisdom of this world. I really believe that. I really believe Solomon, I believe the Holy Spirit moving upon him, writing to his son, would spare him of the wisdom of this world. The very thing that much of the American church is actually now pursuing. So think of two things at the same time. A real forbidden woman, that a son needs to watch out for. And at the same time, a personification of something bigger and more dangerous. So here in verse 7, "Hear me now, therefore, O ye children, and depart not from the words of my mouth. Remove thy way far from her. Come not nigh the door of her house, lest thou give thine honor unto others and thy years unto the cruel. Lest strangers be filled with thy wealth, and thy labors be in the house of a stranger. Thou mourn at the last when thy flesh and thy body are consumed, and say, how have I hated instruction, and my heart despised reproof, and have not obeyed the voice of my teachers, nor inclined mine ear to them that instructed me. I was almost in all evil in the midst of the congregation and assembly." Well, let me read that same 7 through, and I won't do this through the whole thing, but I will through here, verse 7 through 14. These 7 verses, and from the English Standard Version. "And now, O sons, listen to me, do not depart from the words of my mouth. Keep your way far from her. Do not go near the door of her house, lest you give your honor to others and your years to the merciless, lest strangers take their fill of your strength. And your labors go to the house of a foreigner, and at the end of your life you groan when your flesh and your body are consumed. And you say, how I hated discipline, and my heart despised reproof. I didn't listen to the voice of my teachers or incline my ear to my instructors. I'm at the brink of utter ruin in the assembled congregation." Particularly verse 14, I really like the wording in that new English Standard Version translation. So the warning about her and what she can cost him, his son. There is, I'll say again, a real her, and there also is this other thing that I think is really the real her, the real forbidden woman, the real flatterer is the world. We'll see that the further we go, she'll be contrasted with wisdom. She's also a her. We all know how sin can cost a person, and hopefully we have the capacity to look ahead, to look down the road. Every single temptation comes to us with real short-sightedness, real short-sighted perspective. Every time the tempter comes, he wants us to not think about the eventual, but only the immediate, always. Never the eventual, only the immediate. I'll try to point that out some more. So here, Solomon tries to get his son to look ahead. Look ahead. Look at where you could end up being. And listen to the regret that you might find yourself pouring out, oh, how I hated instruction. I didn't listen. He says in verse 15, King James Version, "Drink waters out of thine own cistern, and running waters out of thine own well, that thy fountains be dispersed abroad, and rivers of water in the streets. Let them be only thine and own, and not strangers with thee. Let thy fountain be blessed, and rejoice with the wife of thy youth. Let her be as the hind and pleasant roe." Yeah, it doesn't translate that good in the Old English. "Let her breast satisfy thee at all times. Be thou ravished always with her love. And why wilt thou, my son, be ravished with a strange or forbidden woman, and embrace the bosom of a stranger? For the ways of a man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he pondereth his goings. His own iniquity shall take the wicked himself, and he shall be holden with the cords of his sins. He shall die without instruction, and in the greatness of his folly he shall go astray." So here, Solomon, who, by the way, you guys all know, did not heed what he writes to his son. Let's try to not think about that at the moment. Solomon collected wives, and it was his downfall. Let us receive from Solomon, who as a younger man writes to his son, and urges him to remain faithful in his marriage, because the alternative is expensive. It's costly. It'll kill you. So calling him to fidelity, he talks about an acknowledged thirst that should be quenched from your own cistern. Now I'm reading from the English Standard Version. Flowing water from your own well. Should your springs be scattered abroad, streams of water in the streets, let them be for yourself alone and not for strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice in the wife of your youth, a lovely deer and a graceful doe. Let her breasts fill you at all times with delight and be intoxicated always in her love. Why should you be intoxicated, my son, with a forbidden woman and embrace the bosom of an adulteress? For a man's ways are before the eyes of the Lord. That statement, son, do you not know that God is watching? The rhetorical question, why should you go outside your marriage? Why? Why should you let that happen? Now, can I point out to you that verse 16, let, and verse 17, let, and verse 18, let, and verse 19, let. There's a verb. It's an action. What is the implication? The implication is that we have a choice in the matter. We can choose, and we must choose. That verb is what Solomon calls his son to. That verb is what our Heavenly Father calls all his daughters and sons to. We all have choices to make, and we must make them. And we are called by him to remain in marriage, to remain faithful in that marriage. And you see, all of those were the times that he says here, let. I'm telling you again, that's a command, that's an action. And he says, don't you know God is watching? For man's ways are before the eyes of the Lord, he ponders all his paths. We've got to do everything we do, we should be doing that with the knowledge that God is watching. Verse 22 in the English Standard Version, the iniquities of the wicked ensnare him. A person's own sin traps them. He's held fast in the cords of his sin. He dies for a lack of discipline. Because of his great folly, he's led astray. So you recognize that chapter 5 is a warning. And chapter 5 warns of the consequences of going down that wrong road, departing from fidelity. Now, let me tell you again, I really believe that biblically speaking, adultery is synonymous with spiritual infidelity, idolatry. The two are the same. So there's this real concern that we ought to actually have that our hearts don't go after some other god. This is the theme all through the prophets of Israel, because Israel was to be the bride of Yahweh, the wife of Yahweh. And God pours his soul out. Nobody better than both Ezekiel, to me, Ezekiel and Hosea. And they write as broken-hearted lovers of a wife that has abandoned them and gone after another. So when you hear all of this in Proverbs chapter 5, think, as you should, of a human adulteress or adulterer trying to lead you astray. But also think of the really evil spiritual one, the world system, the world's thinking, the world's philosophy, and the idolatry of everything that the world continues to offer, and the flattery. We'll talk some more about that as we go on. Chapter 6, my son. If thou be surety for thy friend, if thou hast stricken thy hand with a stranger, you've struck hands in a deal. You shook hands on a deal. Thou art snared with the words of thy mouth. Thou art taken with the words of thy mouth. Now, just in case you don't know, the English Standard Version says, my son, if you put up security for your neighbor, if you have co-signed for someone, you're doing that because they're borrowing your good name because they apparently don't have one. It's one thing to do that with your kids. You're trying to help them get established. There's a reason why you shouldn't do it with anybody else beyond that. So if you have become the guarantee for somebody else's debt, what should you do? Verse 3, do this now, my son. deliver thyself. When thou art come into the hand of thy friend, go humble thyself, make sure thy friend. So what you need to do is plead urgently. That's what the English Standard Version says. You need to get out of that deal. You never should have gotten into it. You need to get out of it. Give not sleep to thine eyes, nor slumber to thine eyelids. This is urgent. You shouldn't have signed. You need to get out of that. Deliver thyself as a roe from the hand of the hunter, as a bird from the hand of the fowler. So the first five verses are just plain wisdom. Son, don't lend your credit. Don't lend your name. Don't become a guarantee for somebody else's debt. If you made that mistake, you need to get out of it. This is urgent. And now he shifts gears and says to his son, go to the ant. Hopefully he's not writing to his son, but he's writing of the sluggard, not that his son is one. Go to the ant, thou sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise, which having no guide, overseer, or ruler, provideth her meat in the summer and gathereth her food in the harvest. Brilliant. The society of the ant is something that little boys will study between two layers of glass, because it is truly amazing. And you almost want to ask, who is cracking the whip? They are self-motivated. That statement, listen, sluggard. So the sluggard will come up. The sluggard comes up like the fool comes up a lot in Proverbs. You need to go to the ant. Go learn a lesson. And you know what our Lord Jesus does likewise? I think it was Spurgeon that said, Christ always sends us to the school of nature and says things like, consider the lilies and consider the birds. So our Lord's way, the Creator does such things. And here through a father, he says, go to the ant, you sluggard. The sluggard. I don't know why I like that word so well. Sluggard. It, I don't know what it is. I don't know if they named in English the slug after the verb sluggard. But the slug is slow, isn't it? Slow and slimy. There's something really not respectable about a sluggard. I don't care if it's a sluggard male or female. But go to the ant, you sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise. Go learn something from the bug. Undriven from the outside, the ant from the inside. Having no guide, overseer, or ruler provideth her meat. So the ant is storing. You see them carrying food all the time. You'll see them carrying your stuff. You get an ant invasion. They're taking it somewhere. And other insects just consume on the spot, right? Not ants. They go gather. They actually go gather. They're taking that somewhere. They got the whole colony they're thinking about, they're considering for. It's gathereth her food in the harvest. So he asked the question, verse 9, somewhat rhetorical. How long wilt thou sleep, O sluggard? When wilt thou arise out of thy sleep? You had a little sleep and a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall thy poverty come as one that traveleth, and thy want as an armed man. You're going to be ambushed, and want is going to come upon you like a mugger. Just a little sleep, just a little slumber, just a little folding of the hands to sleep. Just a little. Verse 12, a naughty person, wicked man, walketh with a froward mouth. Now, those are old words, naughty. We don't even take that serious anymore. Oh, you've been naughty, naughty. That's like a joke. So English Standard Version is a worthless person. I like the translation. A wicked man goeth about with crooked speech. Instead of froward, just remember crooked. You see the word froward in the English Bible, crooked. Crooked like a dog's hind leg, crooked. And they use crooked speech. What does he do? This worthless person. He winketh with his eyes, verse 13. He speaketh with his feet. He teaches with his fingers. He's always signaling and gesturing. The worthless guy is seriously into body language. Why? Because his spoken words are not enough. There's sort of a contradiction. He's saying one thing, but gesturing another thing. He's always got a game going. Winks with his eyes, speaks with his feet, teaches with his finger. But frowardness, verse 14, crookedness, it's a perverted heart, ESV. A perverted heart devises evil continually, sowing discord. That's what he's doing. He's always playing this game. Surely you've interacted with this worthless person, haven't you? Haven't you interacted with somebody who just uses crooked speech? Male or female, you've met them. They're always talking about whoever's not there. They're always finding a way to divide people, driving wedges, misrepresenting one to another. They've always got an agenda. They're always up to something. Surely you've had that sense, right? Even when you can't quite put your finger on it, you're like, it's just, they're always up to something. Like there's always some kind of, what is going on here? They did a study, there was an expression that was real popular in the 70s. So I'm just getting really bad vibes, dude. And people are like, what are vibes? That's kind of subjective, right? Just, I don't know, I'm just getting these really bad vibes. Well, they did a real thorough study on vibes that involved the study of body language, and they concluded, I remember this well back then, that bad vibes are happening when a person's words are being contradicted by their gestures or their body language. It was a contradiction that maybe you couldn't even pick up on. It wasn't that obvious. It was really subtle. But perceptive people were going, I'm just getting some really bad vibes, man. It's the contradiction. Well, this worthless person, always winking, gesturing, tapping, always. It says in verse 14, frowardness is in his heart. He devises mischief continually. So just go in verse 15. Therefore shall his calamity come suddenly. Suddenly shall he be broken without remedy. Eventually it all catches up. Calamity. Check out this section. Verse 16 says, these six things doth the Lord hate. Yea, seven are an abomination to him. Now, I'm going to tell you what I believe Solomon's objective for doing this, for giving us lists. Six things this, yea, seven. That is to draw our attention to the seventh, and it puts it in the category with the other six. So you can put it in there and realize it's like those things. You know what I mean? Six things does the Lord hate. Yep, seven are an abomination to him. What are they? A proud look. A lying tongue. Hands that shed innocent blood. We're all on the page here, right? We're all like, yeah, man, I can't look nothing but a proud look. Look at him. What a proud look. That lying tongue. Who doesn't hate a lying tongue? Hands that shed innocent blood. Yeah, we're all on the same page. A heart that devises wicked imaginations. Feet that are swift in running to mischief. False witness that speaks lies. We're all there. We're all going, yeah. These are bad things. We share God's hate of these things. And just to get us to the seventh, which is the real, it's like the punchline. Seven. What is it? And he that soweth discord among brethren. We're like, whoa, that's like a hands that shed innocent blood. A lying tongue. Yeah. Somebody who is sowing division. Somebody who is trying to cause trouble. One who sows discord among brethren. See, there's a vice right there that unlike people, you know, who struggle with a cigarette habit, you can do in church. This is a vice that you can do in church. And you can even cloak it with spiritual talk and like, yeah, listen, I think we should pray for them. I just wanted you to know so you could pray for old so-and-so. Yeah. So I think that this is a clever and really poetic way of drawing our attention to put sowing division, discord, in a category of some really nasty stuff, so we can appreciate how bad it is. People that sow discord, sow division, they're not in a good list with God. Verse 20, my son, keep thy father's commandment and forsake not the law of thy mother. Bind them continually upon thine heart and tie them about thy neck. When thou goest, it shall lead thee. When thou sleepest, it shall keep thee. When thou awakest, it shall talk with thee. For the commandment is a lamp, and the law is a light, and the proofs of instruction are the way of life. Lamp, a light, and the way. A lamp, light, and the path to life. One of the things that we haven't done for a while with teen camp, we used to do it on Tunk Mountain on the hike. We do a night hike with the guys. Do different things with the guys than we did with the girls. Guys would have a tea party. I mean, a testosterone party. And the girls would have an e-party, you know, go do girly things. And among the hard, reckless, crazy things that the guys would do with me, go up Tunk Mountain in the dark. Well, those are all cool. Everybody's got good flashlights. But just for the sake of that experience, let's all shut off our lights. Let's just shut off our lights until I tell you when. And let's just see how successful we are in the dark of sticking to this trail. Let's see how successful we are in getting where we're going. Well, that was always disastrous. You couldn't do it very long. It's hard to even stay together. You can do your best with kind of groping, and you can kind of, you get a rough idea. At least hopefully you know where up is if there's some view of the sky. But it doesn't take long to get off the trail. All right, guys, let's all turn our lights back on. Whoa, we're way off. We'll get back on the trail. It's a great experience. And if you've spent any time in your life in the dark, not really knowing where to go, spiritually speaking, you have a greater appreciation for this truth that the commandment of God, that the word of God is a lamp to our feet, light to our path. It will illuminate your way, show you the way, in verse 24, to keep thee from the evil woman, from the flattery of the tongue of a forbidden woman, strange woman, King James Version. What is her primary weapon? The flattery, the ego that she appeals to. Listen, it's true whether you're male or female. If you're a lady, you know what compliments do to your heart. And they can be used to lure us, all of us, men and women alike, with the law of God, the command of God, will keep us from that. Verse 25, lust not after her beauty in thine heart, neither let her take thee with her eyelids. Ah, that's quite a statement. Now, you get ladies, you know the same thing. There are guys who will, they communicate. They're like that crooked, worthless piece of crap guy back here in verse 14. That's a paraphrase. But always winking, always looking. And that guy, listen, that guy that you want to watch out for, he's not batting his eyelids like some girl. But he'll give you a longing look. He'll look longer than he should. He uses his eyes. You guys understand that. Men and women both use their eyes. People are always sending out signals. Just like the lightning bugs, fireflies. Beep, beep. You understand that's what's going on, right? The males are flying, blinking their butts in the air. You know what's going on? You understand? And we go, oh, look at the fireflies. Isn't that cute? Do you know what's going on here? This is like the club out here. And there's little girl bugs on the ground, on a blade of grass going, blink, blink, I'm here, I'm here. And they're always sending these signals. Humans are doing the same thing. You go to work and there are people sending signals. They're subtle, but they'll involve their eyes. They'll look longer than they should. They'll reveal things. Or statements just a subtle complaint about the person they're married to see how you might respond. Just check in. Just put little tests out there all the time. Don't let her take thee with her eyelids, Solomon says to his son. And why do you have to say that? Because people have been taken with eyelids. Eyelids will do it. Because what are they doing? What are eyelids doing? Eyelids are saying, you're so awesome. You're the one. That's very flattery. Nothing like eyelids to flatter. Verse 26, King James Version is a little rough here, but for by means of a whorish woman, a man is brought to a piece of bread. That's a little not PC, is it? Yep, by means of a whorish woman. And ladies, you can likewise, you understand that there are man whores. By means of a whorish man. I don't think the scripture is being sexist here. This just happens to be father writing to his son. English Standard Version. For the price of a prostitute is only a loaf of bread, but a married woman hunts down a precious life. That's something to consider. Hmm? Verse 27. I didn't finish verse 26 in the King James Version. For by means of a whorish woman, a man is brought to a piece of bread, and the adulteress will hunt for the precious life. Can a man take fire into his bosom and his clothes not be burned? Can a man take fire into his bosom? Or can you? Can you embrace fire without it costing you? That Solomon says, son, you're playing with fire. Can one go upon hot coals and his feet not be burned? Can one? There are those who practice firewalking. You'll find people, voodoo practitioners down in the Caribbean islands, firewalking. And just in case you don't know, it's not that supernatural. It's really not. Wood is not the best conductor of heat. It's all about having really well calloused feet and really proper rhythm with your tempo, with your steps. And they will walk right through burning coals barefoot, which can be done, again, if your feet skin is thick enough and your timing is right. You just keep moving. There is nobody doing lava walking because lava transfers heat better than wood coals. You guys understand? Just a little piece of trivia there, that firewalking is really a trick. It's really a trick. People make it look like it's really supernatural. It's like snake handling in deviant Christian church, really crazy, weird Christian churches. They may be, I don't know, they may actually believe the right gospel, but they get this idea that they can take up snakes and they will not harm them. And that's a test of their spirituality and a test of their faith. And they also die. But they don't all die. Why? Well, because you can actually build up an amazing immunity to venom. And most of them have. Just as every drug addict here who has lived seasons of their life on poison knows. You build amazing tolerances. God has designed us to do that. Anyway, so just in case you go, you read that. Can one go upon hot coals and his feet not be burned? Well, technically, yes, it can be done, and there are people doing it, but they also are burning also. Their feet are, they're not normal. You guys remember when you were kids, though, barefoot summers? Remember that? Remember when our feet were tougher than tires? Of course, every Maine kid, my fellow Mainers, you remember, busting off the snow boots and the socks and spending a couple of weeks in the spring. Oh, ow, oh, ow. But before you knew it, you were peeling out in the gravel, running on glass, broken bottles. Do you remember when your feet would do that? And it's an amazing human capacity to thicken and callous the skin. do that and add a little fire to it. You also can firewalk. Spent too long on that one, but verse 28, can one go upon hot coals and his feet not be burned? Well, so he that goeth into his neighbor's wife, whoever touches her, she'll not be innocent. You play with fire, you get burnt. Okay, I've never quoted that without telling you about my friend Billy Gillette. I got to tell you this one for just a moment. I was 14, 15 years old. I was exercising all the time. I just wanted muscle so bad. I didn't want to be skinny. I was such a skinny kid. I had ribs like a xylophone. You could play me like corrugated sheet metal. And I had transparent skin. You could see my veins. I had to tease the hair on my shins to keep my socks up. And I wanted to do something about it. And I was working out all the time. I'm doing push-ups and rocks and stuff. And I didn't have a dad, so I wanted to impress my grandfather. So I was flexing, and it disgusted him. He was sipping tea, spewed his tea. He was not impressed with my flexing at all. Kenneth Woodrow Graves going, someday some little Frenchman is going to knock that out of you. I remember at the time going, a little Frenchman? I pondered for years. Was there a little Frenchman in my grandfather's story? Why is it going to be a Frenchman? What? I'm like, what? Anyway, no kidding. 2 years later, I'm 16 years old. I'm a student, and too dumb to recognize the circumstance for what it was. I'm on a farm, just like CRD, a little rougher. In the middle of nowhere, Alabama, I'm 16, bunking with all ex-convicts in their 20s. You think I'd have a little respect? But I didn't. I was feeling really frisky. All 140 pounds of me was going, come on. And I picked my buddy, Billy. He became my buddy. He was 10 years older than me. He had scars from all his hard living, hard prison time, horror stories. But Billy was part of my education. He's stocky, about 5'7", with tree trunk arms. And I had long, skinny ones. I'm like, come on, Billy, come on. I'm dancing, jabbing. And he said he was from New Orleans, but he'd said Nolens. He had the accent, I'm from Nolens. He had a little Cajun. And he'd say, and he said it three times. You play a fire, you get burnt. He was chuckling and doing this. He goes, you play a fire, you get burnt. He said it the third time. You play with fire, you get burnt. And then the whole world went brown. Everything went brown. And when I started to, the brown started to go away and the light came back, trying to breathe. And he had punched me in the chest. That was mercy. That was real mercy. And he hit me so hard, it hurt to breathe for weeks. And that was mercy from a guy who did hard prison time, who was looking at this kid full of himself, and he just drilled me. But I'm not kidding you. All my life, all of these, goodness sake, decades later, I still hear Billy going, you play a fire, you get burnt. It's written in my heart, my sternum. So every time I hear Solomon on this issue, you play a fire, you get burnt. That's what he's saying. He said to his son, you play a fire, you get burnt. Look at this one. In verse 30, men don't despise the thief if he steals to satisfy his soul when he's hungry. I mean, who can't have a little mercy? You got a hungry guy, and you catch him, and he's stealing. He's not just trying to get your stuff. He's not greedy. The guy's shaking. He hasn't eaten. He's just trying to get some food. You could have some mercy, right? But if he's found, he's going to restore sevenfold. He shall give the substance of his house. But whoso committeth adultery with a woman lacketh understanding. He that doeth it destroyeth his own soul. There's no understanding like the poor hungry thief who stole a pie off your windowsill, right? No, this is something more serious. A wound and dishonor shall he get, and his reproach shall not be wiped away. I know a man who became suspicious of his wife's behavior and put a tracking device on her phone. And so that phone was at a hotel. He went and kicked the door open to find his wife with another man in an act. And no kidding, the man goes, "It wasn't me!" Can you believe? That was like a reflex. I won't tell you the rest of the story. It didn't end well for that guy. Wasn't me. The guy's like, "It wasn't me." Anyway, was it you? Looks like you. And English Standard Version, he'll get wounds in dishonor and his disgrace will not be wiped away. Pastor Chuck had restored many men, fallen pastors who fell and committed adultery. Pastor Chuck had restored them in the ministry. He believed in grace and believed it all the way to the end of his life. But he also said, they're never the same. He also said that. He said, "Yeah, all right, yeah, God is forgiving and God can still use the guy, but they'll never be the same." He said, they'll never soar as high. It's a sad reality. This statement, his disgrace will not be wiped away. "For jealousy makes a man furious, and he will not spare when he takes revenge. He'll accept no compensation. He will refuse though you multiply gifts." The English Standard Version. So you're not going to buy him off. You're not going to, like, "Can we settle? Listen, I don't know, what's it get?" Oh, go to your pocket and you're going to get all hurt. So adultery is not like a poor hungry thief. It's a way, way worse thing. Solomon speaking to his son. Ooh. Chapter 7. Do you think? I think so. Let's go for it. "My son, keep my words and lay up my commandments with you." I'm going to draw your attention again to those verbs because he keeps repeating them. He keeps saying, do this. Keep my words. Lay up my commandments with you. Store them, right? "Keep my commandments and live, and my law is the apple of thine eye. Bind them upon thy fingers, write them upon the table of thine heart. Say to wisdom, thou art my sister, and call understanding thy kinswoman. That they," wisdom and understanding, "may keep thee," so you understand their personifications. Wisdom and understanding, you need those ladies, son. They're going to keep you from this bad lady. And so I do maintain that he is warning about a real danger and a real woman. He's also warning about something way bigger that wisdom and understanding will keep you from. They are women as well. "That they may keep thee from the forbidden woman." Verse 5 in the English Standard Version, again, to keep you from the forbidden woman, from the adulteress with her smooth words. Smooth words. Look at this. "For at the window of my house, I looked through my casement, and I beheld among the simple ones." So Solomon goes, "I looked, I beheld, and I discerned among the youths a young man void of understanding." So Solomon can look out his window, and he can measure an IQ, in a sense, from a distance. Well, now you want to go, Solomon, how? Did he really just look that stupid? Was it that obvious? How'd you know? How did you discern that this guy's stupid, that he has no understanding? This guy's simple. Listen. I like the English Standard Version on this one. "I've seen among the simple, I perceived among the youths, a young man lacking sense." How do you know that? The very next lines tell us where he was and when. Where he was and when he was there reveals he has no sense at all. Yeah, verse 8, "Passing through the street near her corner, he went the way to her house." In the twilight, in the evening, in the time of night darkness. Verse 9 from the King James Version, "In the twilight, in the evening, in the black and dark night." That's right. You can tell he's stupid for where he is and when. Surely you guys, fellas, all you guys who have been associated with criminals in your life, how many times have you heard somebody go, no, man, it was a bum rap, man. It was a totally bum deal. I mean, listen. It's just a classic case of being in the wrong place at the wrong time. Then everybody say that one, and you go, yeah, you're wrong place at the wrong time. That's right. You were still at the crime scene when the cops came. That's the wrong place at the wrong time. I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. You were the wrong people. So this guy's in the wrong place at the wrong time. Verse 10 says, and behold, there met him a woman with the attire of a harlot, subtle of heart. So all you know about her is how she dresses. She has the attire of a harlot. That is, she's dressing to draw attention. She is loud and stubborn. Her feet abide not in her house. Now is she without, now in the street, and lieth in wait at every corner. What you're going to know here is that she's married. This is one, a married woman who is out on the hunt. Yeah. The same statement. She's loud and wayward. Her feet don't stay at home. Now in the street, now in the market. At every corner, she lies in wait. In verse 13, so she caught him, kissed him, and with an impudent face. English Standard Version. She seized him and kissed him, and with a bold face, she said to him, I had to offer sacrifices today, and I paid my vows. Yikes. As if she's done business with God. Got her sin debt all cleaned up and ready to start a new account. Start a whole new ledger. Do you understand how this isn't some woman coming out like she's the devil. She's like, peace offerings. There's a spiritual connection between you and me. I've paid my vows, therefore I came forth to meet thee diligently to seek thy face, and I have found thee. Did you hear that? English Standard Version. So I have come out to meet you, to seek you eagerly, and I have found you. And he's just dumb enough to go, oh, yeah. That's right. Me. And why wouldn't you? Anyway, if he's an old man, he'd be like, that's right, I still got it. What is you still got what? The ability to actually look better than you are? The ability to play the stupid game? I still got it. It? Total stupidity? Yeah. You still got it. But the flattery is what she comes out with. And then she goes in verse 16, I have decked my bed with coverings of tapestry. I can't imitate her. It will only horrify you. It will not sound alluring at all. I deck my bed with coverings of tapestry. But listen, she's like painting this pretty picture with carved works, with fine linen of Egypt. I'm like, what? Fine linen of Egypt. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh and aloes and cinnamon. I think that's culturally lost on us here, you guys. But let's just read from the English Standard Version, if I may. I have spread my couch with coverings of colored linens from Egypt and linen, Egyptian linen. I've perfumed my bed with myrrh and aloes and cinnamon. But this one, how about this one? Verse 18. Come, let us take our fill of love until the morning. Let us solace ourselves with loves. Okay, till the morning. But what about, what's after that? He's too stupid to ask that. And that is not discussed. That's not like, you know, and then I'll eat your heart tomorrow afternoon. I'm going to have you on a little spit and a rotisserie in the fireplace. Do you understand the short-sightedness of her pinch, her presentation? Let's just, oh my goodness, I can't, forgive me. Another hit country song from the 70s. There was a woman singing, let the devil take tomorrow, Lord, tonight I need a friend. Yesterday is dead and gone. And tomorrow is out of sight. It's so hard to be alone. Help me make it through the night. Do you remember that one? Your parents played that one on their country radio. I'm like, I was just a kid here, and I go, oh, that's awful. That's tragic. Yesterday's dead and gone, tomorrow's out of sight, but it may be out of sight, but if we don't think ahead a little bit, we're doomed. And she's like, no, no, don't think ahead. Let's just think about tonight. Come, let us take our fill of loves until the morning. Sorry. That is absolutely silly, isn't it? But she's like, oh, come. But she paints this picture. Come. And she, don't think about tomorrow afternoon or tomorrow evening when this all catches up with you. Oh, 80s pop. Listen to your heart. It is lying to you. I mean, it feels so right, it can't be wrong. Have you heard that one in a line in a song? That's exactly the thing. That, I don't know how deep mice think, but that's exactly their thought as they approach the bait on the trap. This feels so right, it can't be wrong. Snap! Right? You did it, didn't you, Adam? Snap! That's the last thing. This feels so right, it can't be. Snap! She says, for the goodman of the house, for the goodman is not at home. He's gone on a long journey. He's taking a bag of money with him. He will come home at a day appointed. So we have time. English Standard Version, for my husband is not at home. He's gone on a long journey. Took a bag of money with him. At full moon, he'll come home. So this guy, Solomon looked out the window. He's watching this. Solomon, he looked. He discerned. He said, wow. Solomon is going, wow. He's fallen for this. And what did Solomon say worked on him? Verse 21, with her much fair speech, she caused him to yield with a flattering of her lips. She forced him. Forced him. Arm is behind his back. She's forcing him with flattery. You get that picture? Oh, okay, okay. With flattery, she forced him. English Standard Version. With much seductive speech, she persuades him. With her smooth talk, she compels him. He was compelled. My cousin Eric and I, Eric introduced me to one of the funnest, forgive me, ladies, this one may disturb you, one of the funnest games, one of the funnest activities I remember from childhood. 20-gauge shotgun on the roof of the chicken house. It's a flat roof, and you just lay there. Eric goes, you gotta do this, this is amazing. Because the rats are greedy. They throw popcorn on the ground. And the rats would come from under the chicken house after the popcorn, and he'd vaporize them. Bam! And the moving target. And the rats would be, there's other rats back to going, I don't know. It didn't work out too good for that guy. But I'm going for it. And they come out there dodging the splattered rat. Bam! You get another one. Now, that honestly, that was a fun shooting gallery. Just waiting for him. Little 20-gauge, bird shot, serving a worthy cause, protecting the chickens. But their lust just blew my mind. The lust of the rats. Like, I'm going for it. Heck with it. I'm going. Bam. Each one. Well, verse 22, he goeth after her straightway, as an ox goeth to the slaughter, or as a fool to the correction of the stocks. We don't get to see much of that anymore. Till the dart strike through his liver, as a bird hastes to the snare, and knoweth not that it is for his life. Hearken unto me now, therefore, ye children, and attend to the words of my mouth. Let not thine heart decline to her ways. English Standard Version says, let not your heart turn aside to her ways. Don't stray into her paths. I'm going to tell you again, yes, there's a real woman you ought to watch out for. If you ladies, there's a real man. man whore you need to watch out for. But more than that, there's something else that flatters us. It's the world, and the world wants us to think in terms of self and us. And we're awesome. We should be respected. We should be worshipped. We should be adored. We should be. And that, it's a trap. She is destructive. Don't go not astray in her paths. Verse 26, for she has cast down many wounded. Yea, many strong men have been slain by her. Her house is the way to hell, going down to the chambers of death. Is that not eloquent? Her house is the way to Sheol. It's the way to her house. She's painted this really pretty picture. It even smells good. Cinnamon and aloes and all these perfumes, tapestries, and all these fancy lotions. That was a Nacho Libre reference. What's on the other side? There's a trap door in that house. There's a trap door, and it opens to a shaft to go straight to hell. The way to hell is quite seductive. And the world is constantly calling, constantly. It's the sirens. And the sirens luring us to the rocks. We got to not be deceived by that. That's why we need the law of God. That's why we need the commands of God. That's why we need to hold them.